subsequent morass of committees and subcommittees, ad hoc, de facto, postmortem, and reductio ad absurdum, which relieves every functionary of his personal responsibility and too often of his honor. Well, in short, paper shuffling could be made a minimal and not very lucrative part of the educational process. The system will continue to file, regiment, and squeeze people through destructively narrow channels. I seriously doubt whether fundamental change can be accomplished until individuals stop hiding behind their titles and their authority and begin in all of their human disorder to confront the key issues of our time in earnest and open debate. I think, for instance, that Skip Kelly's idea of respectfully addressing a series of basic questions to President Kennedy is an excellent one. We need to know who the president of this college is. Just as he needs to know who we are. If we are to live together in a humane community, we can remain strangers no longer. The enemy today in this system is no man, nor is it any group of men. It is anonymity and the abrogation of individual responsibility. The anonymity of mobs is as dangerous and as dehumanizing as the anonymity of bureaus. In fact, impersonality of all sorts is so dangerous and so fundamentally sinister that in the preface to the Screwtape Letters, that noted radical Episcopalian, Cambridge Don, and professor of Renaissance literature said this, using modern bureaucracy as a symbol of hell. He said, we live in the managerial age, C.S. Lewis writing the Screwtape Letters. The greatest evil is not now done in those sordid dens of crime that Dickens loved to paint. It is not even done in concentration camps and labor camps. In those, we see its final result. But it is conceived and ordered, moved, seconded, carried and minuted, in clean, carpeted, warmed, and well-lighted offices by quiet men, with white collars and cut fingernails and smooth shaven cheeks who do not need to raise their voice. Hence, naturally enough, my symbol for hell is something like the bureaucracy of a police state or the offices of a thoroughly nasty business concern. I think that this fundamental evil of anonymity and impersonality is so dangerous that it should receive top priority. This is the thing we must change, and we must work persistently, rationally, until we achieve that end.
Last Thursday, you know about. The first is that there has been a slight change in Mr. Brandon's status. Last Thursday, when we had our first public airing of these cases, Dr. Kennedy has announced that instead of simply firing Mr. Brandon, when Mr. Brandon receives his doctoral status, he will be granted tenure and rehired. That's not much, but it's something. But if we can gain this much simply by talking about the issue, it kind of makes you wonder what we could do for clearing up this mess if we made a few requests or even went a little farther and called a demand. We want to thank everyone who helped circulate our petition and all those who signed it. We collected 840 signatures in less than 4 school days. And so on Tuesday night, we presented it to the Student Affairs Council. We had between 4 and 5 times the necessary number of signatures to put this on a ballot, so early the next quarter we expect a special election on this issue. The reasoning behind the petition is that we feel the general student body must support any system of evaluation instructors, and that an election will give them the opportunity to express their opinion before we have the system set up. Paul Bankey, our ASR president, that this petition just passes a lot of rhetoric and has asked us to withdraw it. I just don't really understand this. He evidently doesn't trust the student body to give him their opinion. That's really strange because, I mean, it was this student body that elected him, you know? There's been talk of a demonstration next Tuesday. It's important that as many people as possible understand the forces pushing towards this means of expression. In his letter in yesterday's Mustang Daily, Dr. King, I have never hesitated to meet with duly constituted student groups to answer their questions. You can see off over on this side, we've got some people who have met with Dr. Kennedy and he answered their questions. It's done a lot of good, really. Still, I believe he is a man of integrity, and I'll admit that. Nevertheless, I have to suggest that he made a forgivable human error when he made this statement, because Tuesday, his secretary told me that he had turned down Stamp's request to meet with us before the students and answer our questions. He prefers to work through ASI, it seems. We are a duly constituted group. We have a charter and the whole trip, so in case you wonder about it. As far as ASI is concerned, Tuesday morning, ASI President Paul Banky insinuated in front of three of my friends that I'm a liar. Tuesday evening, ASI President Paul Banky asked us to withdraw a petition asking that the whole student body be given a chance to express his opinion on a particular matter. It's a little hard to believe that under such leadership, ASI is representing the students. I no longer recognize it as such. Charges made the past week. This is a matter of extreme importance to the entire academic community. It is important that we put off wasting time before clearing up this matter. On behalf of students who are in action politics, and on behalf of the instructors who were not retained, and on behalf of the 840 people who signed our petition, and on behalf of the entire academic community, I request that Dr. Robert Kennedy meet with us here for a public gathering this next Tuesday, March 9th at 11 a.m. If Dr. Kennedy will not appear before the people this Tuesday, then perhaps the people should go to him. If Dr. Kennedy does not appear next Tuesday, then myself and a number of other people have already agreed that we will go to the administration to go see him. Okay, now, we have a couple announcements, a couple people that want to make sure announcements. One thing, there's a rumor that we keep hearing from all these really good sources that our governor, Ronald Reagan, is going to attend the opening of this giant pinball machine or whatever it is. We don't know for sure, but if he does come, he will be here for the opening ceremony, which is either at 12 or 12:30, I'm not sure which, on Saturday morning. So like, if you're not doing anything Saturday, you might come by, and if he shows up, well, it's a situation that makes sense. Evans would like to make a few comments, and after that, Skip Kelly, who's been on the quite well covered in the Mustang Daily recently, has a few things to say.
The Student Tennis Association chapter of the San Luis Obispo Tennis Association is now forming, and I urge you all to support and join us. Through collective action, we can accomplish any of our demands or desires. The dorm people had a rally today in front of the administration building protesting the open door policy and Kennedy's tactics in trying to suppress the their demands that they all be allowed a closed door policy. Now, he isn't here today, but he's going to be here noon Saturday. They're coming back and they're going to talk to him then. And I hope all of you will be here too. We need your support and you need our support. Thank you.
I'm Skip Kelly. That idea is free. He's asking an autograph from the Kennedy. He answers serious questions. This is an impromptu speech, and the reason being, President Kennedy answered my letter in the Mustang Daily, and I answered his answer. And it was to be in today's paper, and they couldn't get it in. I don't think that there's any reason outside of just that it was too long. So I'd like to comment on some of the answers that I gave. and Sisters of Liberty.
I want to make four points. First of all, the committee of 60 questions does not want formal recognition from the school. Candy, said that if you want to become an official part of the bureaucracy, that's the official channel. Rise will make it clear, we don't want to become an official part of the bureaucracy. And we have no reason to. We don't have any bylaws or officers or codes or bureaucratic ceremonies, whatever. Our only reason for existence is to formulate 60 questions, 60 serious questions, which we wish to put before you. Second, if any of you want to know who's on this committee, we're not, saying there's thousands of us and all that sort of thing. We just have to wait until the questions are done and formulated, and the people who are writing them are going to be proud of them, and they're going to sign their name to them. And that's as simple as that. Okay, third, the Mustang Daily misquoted my statement, and it's in their title or their headline saying the student challenges president to a debate. I clearly said in my letter that we're not challenging to a debate. We won't ask him these questions and let him grow with it. Yeah? Okay. Fourth. There's something wrong. This is a statement I made. I don't think it'll ever be published. There's something wrong with the college. His attitude is to say to his students, don't get involved with the ideas you're talking about in school. Now, pretend like they're unreal, okay? I would hope that we would all put ourselves kind of on trial with these 60 questions. I hope that we would learn to listen and to respect each other's points of view when we do meet with him and when he does attempt to answer them. I would hope that we all would discover that we need each other. And we do. We do. In case there's any doubt, I am continuing to fast. If anybody questions whether or not I am fasting, like it's a big joke and I go out to Guadalupe and have a hamburger every night or something. I'm checking him in the health center every day, every few days, and they monitor him by his condition. And I signed a form which Dean Chandler or President Kennedy can call down there anytime, and they will tell him what to know. And as far as he is concerned, you just have to take my word for it. One of the things that kind of amused me about his response was, he just kind of flippantly said, well, this guy Kelly wants an audience for his ideas. And Kennedy always seems to assume that he deserves, by his position, the benefit of the doubt on anything he says. And probably a lot of people believe that. I don't think it's true. Okay. And so I think that as time goes on, people are going to start to ask, why doesn't he want him to sit down and answer 60 questions? And the question I'm going to put before you is this. He brought up that he has a right to remain silent or to have his own ideas. And I respect that issue. The question is his right and his opinion worth somebody else's right? And we might come to that, pretty dramatic in a couple weeks. But I'm not afraid because I'm sure, I have confidence that in the end, he'll decide to do this. So that's all I have to say. Thank you. Mr. Brennan and Dr. Rizzo have said they'd be willing to stay. The other instructors all have classes at 4 o'clock. But I'll be right over here. If you ask questions, if not, well, then we can leave or whatever. I'd like to thank you.
This last one that I mentioned is an artist who left here about 2 years ago. I speak for him today also. I am very bitter. I shall always remain bitter. Without such talent, shall remain unrewarded. It is rare to find someone with a twin gift to be an artist of rather definite talent and note, and at the same time, be able to teach very well. And this man is no longer here. He wanted to teach here. The young physicist wanted to teach here. The candidate for governor wanted to teach here. The lawyer wanted to teach here. There was no question about their having a falling out with the system here. They wanted to improve it. So this artist now is down in Los Angeles teaching at some college there, which I'm sure is benefiting quite a bit from his capabilities. And I have a specimen of his artwork at my home where I can look at it every evening and realize certain sad things. I think it's more important, in a way, to talk about these cases. But at least they're all part of one package. And I was very much pleased and heartened last Thursday when I noticed the air conditioning auditorium filled with students. I suddenly realized that Cal Poly students are interested in these things. And I'm sure that from such meetings, nothing but good can come.
Peter Molnar, considered by many people to be one of the best instructors on campus, this is his terminal year also. Kennedy gives the excuse, and it is just an excuse, but the reason why Peter Molnar isn't being rehired is because he doesn't have the doctorate, but I'm going to have a little bit to say about that particular excuse later. Next year is John Umbeck's last year. He's not going to be here after next year. He has a terminal contract, and the excuse again is that he doesn't have the talk about John Umbeck from another angle right now, and that is the angle of the fact that one of his texts has been was censored. Now, this is just a part of the entire pattern. Umbeck taught a class, Econ 203, I believe. He used a book titled The Radical Guide to Economic Reality by Angus Black. He asked the students in his economics class to write reports on this book, and he got 150 book reports back, and all but two of the students who read the book said they liked it, they could get into it. Even those who did not agree with some of the attitudes within it felt that it was a good book. But in steps Dean Carl Cummins, and he sent a memo to the head of the economics department saying something to the effect of this: it's been called to my attention that the economics class is not being taught in the way that it's supposed to be taught, whatever that means. And he criticized the use of text that might have questionable language in it. And I suppose for anyone who is an absolute Puritan and can't stand words like hell and shit, I suppose perhaps a book might be considered to have questionable language in it. But if it's a good book, what difference does it make what kind of language is in there? But I've grown up enough to understand and respond to this kind of language in a way it deserves responding to. Well, what are we doing here in college? In any case, the department got together because Dean Cummins suggested that if such texts perhaps he might require those departments under his deanship, but not to take these economics classes anymore. So this put the economics department in a bind. They felt that if they would allow total freedom, the use of text, that perhaps they would lose these classes, and therefore the department might not have as much to do, and therefore they might have to cut down on the number of people in a department. And so they surrender to this rather not so subtle pressure by Dean Cummins. The department got together and they loaded it, and instructors could only require one text. They could not require any other text besides that one. Now, pure and simple, that is censorship. That means the instructor does not have the right to choose the text that he desires for his classes. That is in direct violation of academic freedom. And it's a part of the entire pattern that exists here. I, too, would like to direct your attention to that green sheet that gives you the academic background of Ralph Verana. You'll notice that the degrees that he does have are in his field. He also has the equivalent of something like 3 doctorates in his graduate studies there. I want to point this out because just this year in the English department, a teacher has been given tenure who doesn't have even 1 advanced degree in his field. Okay, now that's all right. That's okay. He came here with another understanding, just as Ralph Verana came here with another understanding. When they came to this college, they weren't told that you have to have your PhD in order to stay on. So I think that this person in the English department should have been given tenure, as in fact he was. But he does not have even a master's degree in English, much less the doctorate. He does not have any doctorate. He does not even have a master's in English. I'm driving that across because Kennedy's statement that Ralph Verano is not hired because he lacks a doctorate is a very, very, very lame excuse. Just as his statement that Peter Molnar is not being hired because he lacks a doctorate is a very lame excuse. The excellence of these two men as teachers isn't even challenged. They are students who have taken them know their quality of teaching. So when Kennedy tells you he's not hiring one particular professor because he lacks a doctorate, and yet goes on and gives tenure to another professor who doesn't even have a master's in his field, well, maybe something's wrong there. That's not just double standards, that's triple standards, quadruple standards. And I'd like to encourage all of you to focus your attention in the near future behind the case of Ralph Verana. Thank you.
Okay, our final instructor today is Mr. Charles Mabel, who is laying on high down.
The French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau said, "Man is born free, yet everywhere he is in chains." To a very large extent, I think Rousseau is wrong about that. I don't think man is born free. He's born the slave of time, chance, the weakness of his body, the limits of his mind, and finally, the slave to death. He's born the naked ape, or the poor, bare, forked animal. He comes into a world which is enemy to his physical well-being, to his peace of mind, and yet somehow, in spite of all of the forces massed against him, he continues to survive, and sometimes even to be happy. When I consider all of our natural enemies and all of our limitations, I am amazed to find that even in the relatively restricted area in which we have the power to determine the conditions of our lives, we often choose to be slaves. We establish governments which tyrannize us. We engage in suicidal warfare. We found commercial, industrial, and educational institutions ostensibly to serve our needs, and then we allow these institutions to generate a life of their own and consequently to deprive us of life. We allow ourselves to be regimented, filed, ground, polished, and then squeezed into narrowly prescribed channels, and we call these channels our majors, our fields, our areas of specialization, our professions, our careers. Whether we are students, teachers, administrators, civil servants, business executives, dope pushers, technicians, gamblers, disc jockeys, ministers, revolutionaries, senators, dealers, gamblers, gangsters, or guidance counselors, or whether we join the ranks of Governor Reagan's able-bodied welfare recipients, we are more and more becoming a part of an ever-swelling army of bureaucrats, men who live lives spent negotiating channels. Bureaucracy is like sin. Everybody hates it. But few people are actually willing to do anything about it. I don't think I've ever met a man who didn't purport to hate bureaucracy. In fact, even Chancellor Dumke dislikes it. He wrote in a recent memo, I quote, "As a faculty member myself," and you can choose to think what you want about that, "as a faculty member myself who spent more than a decade in the classroom, I look upon these proposals," and he's talking about his own proposals for the reform of the state college system, as vastly rewarding to all the faculty who are fundamentally concerned with the end product, the educated graduate, rather than with the system, the bureaucracy, and the time-worn practices which serve well and in their own, in another day." And in fact, the chancellor's proposal to streamline education in state colleges by allowing students to challenge more courses, and by asking areas of study to rethink their reason for being, and by suggesting curriculum reorganization, all of this is really quite impressive on paper. The problem, as I see it, and this is a problem that undercuts the chancellor's overt attitude towards bureaucracy, is with the so-called task forces that he has designated to pursue these goals. These task forces consist of people like Dr. William Lansdorf, Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, Dr. Jerome L. Fox, Chairman of the Educational Policy Committee, Academic Senate of State Colleges of California, Dr. Gerard Friedrich, State College Dean, Academic Planning, and I could go on and on with similar impressive titles. And what I want to know is, who are these people anyhow? Are they friends of yours? Are they friends of mine? I don't know. I don't know them. And I would very much like to know them. I think that particular point is essential to what we are trying to do today. No doubt, at a vast remove from the center of power, students and maybe some junior faculty will be consulted about the changes that will be proposed. But how much effect will students and junior faculty actually have upon these proposals? I would like to know that. I am skeptical about any proposal that declares itself to be aiming at an increased efficiency and an increased advantage to students, and yet is to be implemented by the very people who stand the most, who lose the most, if efficiency and frugality were in fact the real aim of the educational system. More than a system which is as administratively top-heavy as this one, it seems a bit contradictory to ask those people to abolish the status quo. We have the greatest stake in keeping things fundamentally exactly as they are. The necessary fundamental changes are not going to come about through reorganization schedules or curriculum, faculty.